Radio. And now, Free Fire Radio.
Radio. About to commence.
Good morning. This is Nicholas Webb, and I'm sitting in today on New Year's Eve for Carl and Linda. They asked me to come in and run the show today, so this is real fun, real exciting. I wanted to make the show today more than I wanted to provide some real deliverables. And so today what we're going to talk about is something that is talked about all the time in Shasta County, but it seems like there isn't any real moving forward plan. So today we're going to talk about economic development. Since we're thinking about the new year, what does the future look like for Shasta County and Redding? I think that's everybody has an opinion on it. They're very diverse, needless to say. There's a lot of blame storming going on. So we're going to kind of talk to one of the world's experts, and I mean that literally. Peter Sanders wrote the book Cities Rated, and it's the book that virtually every city government and every economic development department uses as a way to determine the various ingredients that make up for economic development. So we're going to talk about that today. Later in the show, we're going to have Jim Milestone from Whiskeytown National Park to ask him some hard-hitting questions about what goes on up at the National Park at Whiskeytown. A lot of interesting things. There's a, you know, it's a 40,000-plus acre national park, and most people are only familiar with the 3,000 or so acre lake. And so we're going to get down and dirty and talk about the trail development work that's going on up there and some of the other initiatives. And then lastly, since I have spent my lifetime studying what it means to develop goals and how to achieve those goals, I'm going to, at the last half hour of the program today, actually walk through and make some suggestions on how we achieve some of our goals for the coming year. So after the break, we're going to have Peter Sanders in and ask him what he thinks we should do in Shasta County to grow and prosper. By the way, I am a management consultant. I provide consulting services to companies outside of California for the most part. And I'm also an author. I'm the author of The Innovation Playbook, which is available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And I'm also the author of The Cost of Being Sick. And I have a very exciting new book that was frightening to write called The Digital Media Innovation Playbook. And it's all about, you know, what is digital media, which is something I know, Bob, you live in a lot.
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking forward to that. My wife, in fact, is, by the way, good morning.
Thank you.
My wife is reading Innovation Playbook. We swiped Carl's copy.
Nice.
And he had so much going on, he wasn't using it. And it's fascinating because we are, of course, developing our program, Boomer Tech Radio, and also having a lot of fun here at KCNR. So welcome aboard, and for the very last day of 2010, amazing.
Yeah, you got the. You want to go?
Yeah,
let's take a quick look
at the weather before we take the break. 33 degrees outside right now. Looks like it's going to be kind of a off and on cloudiness and some rain. 30% chance of rain tonight. No snow in the forecast immediately. Rain will be likely for your New Year's Day. I should be near 44. As we said, 33 degrees in downtown Redding. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyard. And with that, we'll go ahead and take our first break, and we're expecting a caller. And tell me a little bit about this caller before we take the break.
So, again, Peter Sanders wrote the book Cities Rated, and I actually read the book years ago and read it again when I was asked by the city of Redding to do a visionary planning to try to figure out what are the anatomical features or the success drivers that make for a great community. And the other great thing about Peter, he also wrote the book Best Places to Raise a Family, or Best Places to Raise Kids, I believe. And so he's a financial expert. He's he has a master's degree in finance. He's very well known in the business community. He's written several books on personal finance, on economic development, and so on. So he's a neat guy, a lot of great insight. And I thought rather than having somebody local, we would have somebody with no prejudice whatsoever about our community to come in and tell us what he thinks we should do to grow and prosper.
KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media, will be right back.
News Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome back. This is Nicholas Webb standing in today for Carl and Linda Bott. I appreciate them giving me the opportunity to come in and do their thing. It's a lot of fun. Okay, well, on the phone right now, I have, as promised, Peter Sanders. Now, Peter Sanders, as I said, You know, to get a book written, a nonfiction book written, is a statistical mutation. It's almost impossible, especially with today's literary marketplace. But Peter actually has 35 books. I mean, that's got to be some sort of a record. He has served as an executive of HP. He's written several books on finance. But the two books that have sat on my dresser for years are Best Places to Raise Children and also Cities Rated. Cities Rated is literally on the desk of my in my office. And so we're going to, there's a lot of banter going back and forth in Shasta County about what is a good economic development plan, and for that matter, what is economic development. So I thought we'd bring Peter in to get his take from the outside looking in. Peter, are you with us?
I sure am.
Hey,
good morning, Nick.
How are you? Good to talk to you.
So, likewise.
So what, you know, here in Greater Northern California, you know, we have some unique challenges. I mean, obviously we're remote. We're in an area that does not have a university, and whether or not that's important, I'd like to get your take on that. But you combine that with the fact that, you know, in the state of California, we have people leaving the state like rats jumping off a sinking ship. I mean, we have, according to a piece that I looked at just this morning, they're saying that workmen's compensation costs have gone up from 1997 to 2000, just in that period of time, 70%. And that when you look at the regulatory burden and the amount of regulation and the amount of personal and corporate taxation, it's hard for any community in the state of California to really attract a business. So, you know, my first question is, I know that you, when you looked at cities rated, you dissected it into these various drivers. What are those things that you, what are the elements that you dissected a, when you looked and examined a community? What were those things you looked at?
Well, I don't know if you want me to go through the whole list, but I can. As you mentioned, there's nine specific data-driven drivers, and then there's kind of a general quality of life subjective thing that we put on top of that. And the drivers are primarily economic and then also related to education and crime and sort of quality of life attributes, and then finally things like, well, I guess it contributes to quality of life, but entertainment and arts and culture. So it's really all about what it costs to live there, what you can earn living there, and what there is to do there.
Is there ways in which, and I don't know if this was in your body of research, but were there things that you saw that sort of jumped off the page that you'd look at? You know, let's take Granite Bay, for an example, a great community. Is there things that jump off the page in terms of how they have provided great quality of life and economic development?
Well, it's not always about how they provide it. It's sort of what happens in the area, and a lot of these things sort of feed upon themselves. One of the things that we look at quite a bit and seem to indicate, you know, the quality of life in a community and whether it's attractive to people from the outside is the level of educational attainment. What percentage of the population has a four-year degree and a graduate degree? And that seems to be sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Once those numbers are high, then people see it as a quality of life area. They move in. They kick the quality of life up higher. People that are educated demand good education, and so the schools get even better, and the stats get better, and the overall feel gets better of the area. And voila, then you've got a quality community that people want to move to. Another one that's a little less obvious, but we've also found that this is people chuckle at this, but the number of Starbucks outlets in a place was pretty indicative of the quality of overall retail shopping and the experience in an area. An area that had a lot of Starbucks outlets or whatever the local equivalent is tended to be more attractive to people coming in from the outside, as well as a higher quality of life for people living there.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of that, and what I've noticed is that, you know, the question there, of course, is it just representative of the indigenous demand for great coffee, or is it the experts at Starbucks looking at the community demographics to suggest that that's the right place to put a Starbucks?
It's more the latter, but then once it's there, it sort of creates its own demand, if you will. And it has a lot to do, at least in my mind, with you know, to attract a more intelligent clientele, I guess, or more educated clientele, and B, it's indicative that there are people, a lot of independent entrepreneurs, for instance, as well as people that live in the workplace, that like to get together and collaborate. And that's one of the things that I found. Richard Florida found it in his book, The Rise of the Creative Class. People that have that kind of energy and entrepreneurial drive like to get together, like to share stories, like to, you know, move around from one company to the other, like to, you know, be involved in the latest and greatest discussion on technology, and Starbucks is a great place to do that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I had proposed to a few people over the last 3 or 4 years here in Shasta County. I said, you might find this surprising, but it's not about creating a, we have a new development called Stillwater Business Park. It's not about, you know, mowing down a bunch of trees and putting pads for people to put up warehouses and large businesses. It's really about creating a community. And I find that in from looking at a lot of cities, the good news is that you can create that community buzz, initially at least, digitally. But it's interesting you say that, because it does seem to be that there, and it almost sounds esoteric, but the ability to create a cool place to collaborate, that seems to be one of the drivers. When I looked at a lot of data for my own self, when I moved from Los Angeles to Redding, and that's been over 11 years ago now. So I definitely see that there the community part is a very, very big piece of it. That's interesting you say that. There's a lot of myths here, and I'd like to have you specifically address a lot of the myths. Here in Shasta County, we have a lot of people that propagate a variety of myths, and many of them may, in fact, be accurate. So after this break, I'd like to come back and see if you can help us maybe explore some of these Shasta County myths.
Absolutely.
You're listening to KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media. We'll be back with our guest host, Nick Webb, right after this.
Good morning. This is Nicholas Webb back standing in here for Carl and Linda Baugh today. So we're talking about economic development and preparation for a great 2011. And, I've just sort of enjoyed listening to a lot of different vantage points in Shasta County about what we need to do to build an economic base. And, you know, one of the biggest myths that I see and hear first and foremost is that there is this erroneous belief that I've heard in the white noise of Shasta County that you can stop economic development. There are a lot of people that have lived here and want to keep this a small quiet community, and I get that. I really do. I have 4 kids, and we cherish the area that we live in, and we can understand 100% why they feel that way. The problem is it's not realistic. Economic development happens, so it seems to me that what you have to do is to try, to the extent that you can, build these communities. When I did the vision planning for the city of Redding on a volunteer basis, one thing that came from the community, I think kind of loud and clear, is that they wanted economic diversity. And by that I mean they wanted technology jobs, they wanted a variety of opportunities. It's often said here in Shasta County that the biggest export out of Shasta County is smart high school students that go off to college and don't have anything to return for. And that's unfortunate. So is my hypothesis that you can't stop growth in a community right, Peter?
I think that's correct. I think it's as you say, it's more a matter of trying to channel it. Although some communities have been fairly successful. I look at Portland, Oregon, and some of the areas around there. You know, they stop growth. They put limits on things, and that's all well and good, especially for the physical infrastructure. But at times, it tends to drive up prices because you just get that much more pressure in the area to have something, and there isn't the space or the buildings to do it. So it can have its negative effects, you know, economically, to stop growth. But to let growth proceed naturally is probably, it's channeling it, because it can get out of control and go the wrong direction very easily, as you know.
Yeah, you know, I think of like Palmdale and Lancaster. Those were communities that tried to develop their community based on strip mall and retail sales. They tried to build their economy based on a cheap workforce and a low cost of living. And the last time I checked, out of all of Los Angeles County, Palmdale, Lancaster was still the highest crime rate. And really, I don't think anybody could argue that it's probably the worst quality of life in California. So in from what I see, it seems to be a good idea to be careful about promoting a community based on those things. There's a lot of great people here. A lot of smart folks, and they're trying to figure out where we go from here. One of the things that seems to be another myth is
that you have to have a four-year college. Now, I don't know. That seems to make sense to me. I really don't know. What's your opinion on, we have colleges here, but what's your opinion of having a university?
How, well, you know, from what I see looking around at the places that have been successful luring the kind of growth and development that I think you're looking for, it does tend to be a pretty strong factor. And I can think of very few places that are high on the technology radar that don't have some kind of four-year university. For instance, Fort Collins, Colorado's got a wonderful, diverse technology and manufacturing base, and they've got the University of Northern Colorado there. I guess one of the places that comes to mind as a good comparison to Shasta County for the kind of development and experience where it has worked, and it was a stroke of luck, is Huntsville, Alabama. Very rural, kind of out-of-the-way place, pretty much the same distance from major population centers and transportation centers. Huntsville has grown into quite an interesting and diverse, cosmopolitan, technology-driven community, but they got very lucky in doing so. Back in the 1940s, they decided that was a good place to locate some of the rocket scientists that were coming over from Germany, like Wernher von Braun. And NASA ended up developing a big research center there. So if you don't have a university, and they really don't, they have a branch of University of Alabama, but if you don't have a major university, you need to have some other major technology magnet, I think, to make it work, one or the other.
Yeah, you know, one thing I've seen a lot is people developing technology clusters. Surprisingly, Reno has done a great job. I mean, an absolute amazing job. And they're somewhat isolated. I mean, they're part of the 80 corridor. But they have done a great job developing these technology clusters and technology-specific clusters in order to find and attract people. Now, they do have, obviously, the University of Northern Nevada there, I believe it's called.
But the University of Nevada, Reno, and actually that's a very strong school in the science and engineering area. So, they do have that.
Okay, well, I think that's a great point. We do have a quick question from Jay. Jay, what's your question?
Yeah, my question is, good morning first. Hi.
Hi.
My question is this. I've been raised in this area, and, you know, anybody who's been here for more than 10 minutes knows that most people around here make $10 an hour and just scrape by. And many of the business owners and the city fathers of the past liked it this way. What technologies could we develop here that would allow us to have jobs that people who are raised here could actually, you know, get into, could do?
That's a great question, and I'll tell you that if you look at, and we've got to go into a break, but I want to just quickly answer that. If you look at California, we own the medical device space. People that work in the medical device space are not necessarily even have graduate degrees. They're working in various technological verticals. So you can put in medical device companies, biotechnology firms. Yes, there is hire people, but what's interesting is that there are a lot of technology companies that don't require that you have a four-year degree, and we're seeing a transmutation from a conventional education to some of these technology-specific ones, especially as it relates to digital media. So digital.
Well, I hope we can keep that up, because we just lost Arthrotech, which is exactly the kind of company you're talking about.
Great company. I'm very familiar with them, and you're absolutely right. And I'd like to talk about that in more detail after the break. So, Peter, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, pretty much the same point. And this kind of gets back to your channeling development. If you let developers come in and lay out strip malls end-to-end in an area, you're going to get a lot of $10-an-hour jobs. So I think the point's well taken. It's a question of finding the technology that base that works and bringing in not one but several companies in that same area. And Sacramento's kind of attempted to do the same thing with alternative energy companies. I think Redding would be an ideal place, or Shasta County would be an ideal place for that, with the locus of geothermal energy and obviously a lot of sun.
Yep, absolutely.
That's a place that sort of rings true for alternative energy.
Yeah, you know, that I'd like to talk about that after the break. And that, Jay, that was a great call. I want to address that a little bit more after the break. We'll be right back after this message.
Have a great day, guys.
Thanks again.
You're listening to KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media. Our guest host, Nick Webb, will be right back right after Fox Business News. ...1460, the home of Free Fire Media, where it is 7:34. This portion of the program brought to you by B&T Satellite, your dish network provider. Find them on the web at readinghdtv.com. And before we get back to our guest host, Nick Webb, because Carl and Linda are taking a little end-of-the-year break, a much-deserved one, I might add. Speaking of taking a break, some new years and new beginnings and new starts, let's bring in Amy Palko from Adamson's Peak Performance. Good morning, Amy. What is your tip of the week?
Good morning. Well, guys, hey, it's New Year's Eve. It's time that everyone starts to make those New Year's resolutions. So I just want to give people a quick tip when they're setting their goals. They want to be smart, but let me tell you what that stands for. The S is specific. You want to pick an actual thing that you want to achieve. Like, let's say I want to lose 3 pounds in a month. And it has to be measurable. Are you going to measure it with a scale? Are you going to do tape measure? Or are you going to do body fat? You need to pick how you're going to measure it. It has to be achievable, the A. You've got to be able to reach it to make sure that it's something that you can do. It has to be realistic. You can't be saying, I'm going to lose 20 pounds in 1 month. And if you've not been eating well or exercising, don't be choosing something that's out of your reach. And finally, it has to be something that you can attain in a certain amount of time so that you can measure everything, it's reachable, and it's attainable, and then you'll be feeling good about your goals.
All right, Amy, thank you very, very much, and Happy New Year.
Hey, thanks, Bob. You guys have a great New Year, too.
All right, Amy, thank you. And now back to our guest host, Nick Webb, on home of Free Fire Media, KCNR.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And I wanted to get back to Jay's question that he levered after the break. And I know that I see in the chat room here, IndyCar made a good point, manufacturing. One of the challenges are, and I have owned a manufacturing company in San Antonio, Texas, for years, and one of the challenges that you have, well, there are many challenges about starting manufacturing in the state of California. In a cost-driven economy, it is very, very tough. It's not impossible, and I agree that manufacturing should be part of the tapestry. I don't know that it's the complete solution, but the point is well taken, that manufacturing should be part of the ingredients. Peter, one of the things that I see that's probably the most frustrating to me when I talk to people about economic development in Shasta County is that their matrix is how many jobs. They measure everything by how many jobs, and not necessarily the landscape, the diversity of job types, what those jobs mean in terms of the overall economic plan. And so how important is jobs versus jobs that are higher paying in the scheme of quality of life and communities?
From what I found, it's absolutely critical, and you used a very interesting word just a minute ago, and that's tapestry. I think it's really all about having the right mix, and that mix does have some jobs at the high ends, at the middle end, if you will, and at the low end. Too many communities, as we've pointed out here, strictly look for retail and construction to bolster their economy and bolster their tax revenues, but the kind of jobs they provide are not sustainable and not high paying, and it just leads to a low quality of life if you oversaturate with that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you try to build your community with strip malls, somebody has to have a job to be able to buy something. And
right,
I know,
right.
Yeah, it's very delicious for city governments to want to bring in retail because it's great. There's been a lot of discussion on Carl and Linda's show about unions and about, you know, those kinds of things. And, you know, I believe that one of the best things we should look at as part of that discussion is let's try to build our tax base. Let's try to create economic clean jobs here that provide that diversity, because that does go a long way into helping solve a lot of problems. What is the biggest pitfall in your mind in terms of what communities seem to be missing in terms of you know, what is this, what is the hidden secret here in terms of what makes for great economic development and a community that's growing and prospering?
That's kind of the $64,000 question here, and it's difficult to put your finger on. A lot of communities have said, well, okay, let's build this technology center and you know, all these cool buildings and have some kind of a campus and put a bunch of neat restaurants in it and stuff like that. And it doesn't work. It's not a build it, they will come sort of a proposition. It kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the show about community. And an area needs to have a base for a community of well-educated, technology or entrepreneurial-oriented people to attract them. And to some extent, as I said, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So something needs to happen in the area to bring something in and make it put it on the map, basically, as a cool place to go. And, you know, we've got the NASA Center in Huntsville, Alabama. We've got the university and Hewlett-Packard and some of the other companies that have settled in places like Fort Collins and Boise, Idaho. Those things have happened just because it's really almost a stroke of luck. And once that's there, people say, you know, if I'm in that kind of a business, and I'm sitting in the Bay Area looking for a place to move, hey, you know, let me look at Boise, let me look at Lake Stevens, Washington, let me look at Fort Collins, and those people aren't thinking about Redding or Shasta County at all.
Yeah.
So there needs to be something there to establish the reputation of the place as being a high-tech community, whether it's a high-tech business or a locus of high-tech kind of activities like we were talking about, the alternative energy, or a university, and really it's kind of a combination of those things that make it work, and it's very hard to build that from ground up.
Yeah, I agree 100%, and we'll talk towards the end of this program. I'd like to sort of give my prescription for success here. Okay, we have John, I think, has some questions for you, Peter.
Okay.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Nick. How are you this morning?
Great.
Listen, I have a question for your guest. You mentioned Stillwater, and I would like to try to get a read on, he just said something about the stroke of luck of finding businesses that fit and bring in some visibility to the area. And we seem to have a lack of a vetting process of the proposed businesses that the city is going to enter into these virtual joint ventures with.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know, you know, we need to avoid any type of fly-by-night businesses or questionable businesses coming into the area. What city processes are recommended as a vetting process for these things?
That's a great question. Peter, you want to address that?
The mechanics, as I've seen it, sort of vary from one place to another. There's usually some kind of economic development commission. Sometimes it's professionally staffed. Sometimes it's volunteers like Nick that spend time, you know, being the ambassador of a city to the various businesses and then making recommendations to the city government when they come in and say, you know, we were thinking about your area, but we'd like to see this happen. I don't know if there's any particular formula for making that work right. It's just a general chemistry kind of thing that occurs between the community and between the potential businesses, and usually there is some kind of ambassadorship involved in as an intermediary.
Yeah, and you know, I will say to that, you know, imagine developing a product.
Oops, I think we dropped John.
Oops.
Okay.
All right, John, we'll answer it for you on the air. Imagine developing a product where you haven't gone out and determined if anybody wants to buy it. Imagine developing a product where you didn't do any studies to find out if there was marketability. Imagine if a comprehensive analysis wasn't conducted to determine if there was any reason to do it. That's really the bigger question, is not who comes in there. The question is, what kind of infrastructure do we invest in advance, not knowing what the trajectory of the marketplace is? And that's where I think some people get in trouble there. Okay, we've got to go to a break again. Peter, I appreciate all your time today. I know you're a busy guy, and it was a great honor to have you. And we really, really do appreciate your keen insight.
No problem. Enjoyed it a lot, Nick.
All right. Thanks, Peter.
You bet.
KCNR 1460, our guest host Nick Webb will be right back after this. 1460, the home of free fire. KCNR 1460, the home of free fire media. It is 33 degrees at 7:46. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew on Hilltop Drive, the home of Espresso Joe. Now back to our guest host, Nick Webb.
Hey, thank you and welcome back. And by the way, once again, thanks to Carl and Linda Bott for having me set in for him today. It's been a lot of fun, and by the way, happy anniversary. Okay. That was great. Peter's a great guy, and I'm going to give you, as a certified management consultant and business author, I'm going to give you my own unsolicited opinion here on the whole thing. And I nothing like choosing a super controversial subject. But, you know, at the end of the day, here's the bottom line. There are a lot of great people in this county, and they all want the same thing. They love and care about Shasta, and they care about Redding. And, you know, you look at Mark at Shasta County EDC. He's a wonderful guy. He's extremely smart. Kurt is a good guy that's trying to do the right thing at the city level, and I could start mentioning more and more names. I know I sound politically correct here, but these are good people that want to do the right thing. And I think that
if there's a Taoist saying that says when brothers and sisters argue, the bystander takes advantage. It's a lot of fun to talk about still water and talk about decisions that may not have panned out, but I think we need to move beyond that for 2011 and really start talking about how we can all work together and do the right thing so that our kids can go off to college and come back and enjoy the greater Northern California lifestyle. But I would like to offer up just sort of a few suggestions here, and I'd be glad to take some call-ins. And by the way, I am going to give a copy of my book out today to the best caller on the business segment, and then later on we're going to talk about goal setting. By the way, if you don't have my book, you can get it at Barnes & Noble, Borders, or at Amazon.com. It's called The Innovation Playbook, and it's really a book on how to use innovation to drive business growth. And also later on we'll be talking about setting goals and fitness and weight loss, and you can also get my other book called The Cost of Being Sick, which also came out in its second edition this year. Okay, enough self-promotion. I think there is a way to do this, and I think that you have to remember that failing to plan is planning to fail. I haven't seen, I would love to see it, and I'd be glad to offer up some assistance. I would love to see the master plan, and that is a plan that takes advantage of the digital media and the creation of ignition points to drive economic development in Shasta County. I would love to see who is the keeper, the champion of the master plan to provide strategic, smart growth that improves our quality of life, that provides topography and landscape to our economic options. I think there are going to be $10 an hour jobs, but we also need to have higher paying jobs, and we also need to have more diversity in where our money comes from. And that's not speculation. That's based on a lot of great facts. The other thing is that we have to remember that we have to take a look at what we got. And one of the things that I noticed in researching this over the last year for my second book that's coming out in fall called The Digital Media Innovation Playbook, is that economies and communities that are growing and prospering, what they're doing is they're doing what's called ignition. And by ignition, they're starting small groups of communities, and sometimes they're digital communities, and by building these communities, they start what's called migration. Now, here's something that's important to remember. Are we good enough? That's the question that Shasta County has to ask themselves. Are we good enough? Are we good enough to participate in the fact that the overwhelming majority of the highest paying jobs in the medical device space is in California? It's virtually zero in Shasta County. We have none of that here. We live in a state that owns the medical device space, yet we have no medical technology companies here. Biotechnology, we own the biotechnology space, yet we have virtually none of it, if any at all, here in Shasta County. And I could go on and on. Certainly the computer technology, software, the .com or digital space is owned in California. And again, we have none of it here. Are we good enough? That's the question that we have to ask ourselves. Yes, we need manufacturing jobs, but we also need the topography, the landscape of diverse economic income. And without that, I don't think we really get to economic development. I've had the opportunity to sort of bend Peter Sanders' ears and ask him questions so I could share some of his great advice with some of our leaders. Again, I think we've got good people here that want to do the same thing, and they want to see some opportunities. Okay, right now I'd like to take any callers that have any questions or any recommendations that they may have, and we'll do that right after the break. Thank you.
Media, KCNR, 6 minutes now in front of 8 o'clock, and now back to our guest host, Nick Webb.
Hey, welcome back. You know, I probably shouldn't have chosen such a controversial topic, but I'm trying to do some good here. I don't know. All right, listen, the next caller that calls in regarding this topic, I will give them a copy of my $45 book, The Innovation Playbook, A Revolution in Business Excellence. That just came out in October. It's already in its second printing. And those of you that don't get it, you can get it at the local Barnes & Noble here or on Amazon or whatever.
605-4567 and first caller.
All right. So, I think, again, Peter made some really good points that there is not one single issue that will drive economic development, that you really do need to have a community. And I think that's an important thing, is developing a community. That community drives migration, and migration gradually. It's not something you can do overnight. but it does gradually develop improved economic opportunities. So I think that's important. It was fun, gosh, 4 or 5 years ago, doing the visionary program for the city and seeing how passionate people are about this topic. And I just think that we've got some good people in Mark at EDC and Kurt, and I know that not everybody agrees with me, but I think we got a great community here that's really trying to do the right thing. All right. Now, later on, we're going to be talking to, in just a few minutes, with Jim Milestone from Whiskeytown National Park. He'll be in today. And then after that, we're going to do some goal setting. All right.
Real quick, congratulations to Marty. Boy, you lit up the phones there, Nick. Marty, loyal listener, gave us a call. He's going to be reading your innovation playbook, and so I will give you that along with his contact information.
Ah, perfect. Okay.
And thank you very much, and will we be giving away another one next hour because you lit the phones?
Well, I am going to give away the cost of being sick during our goal-setting section.
There we go.
Yeah, so we do have one book. And
so we do have a winner. Thank
yeah,
you.
Can I just leave this here at the station for him to pick it up?
Yeah, as long as, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. So we got your... Marty, your book is here at the radio station to pick up at your leisure. All right, does anybody want to call in with any questions? Or I'll tell you what, let me look at our...
Do I need to make that bigger?
Yeah.
The older you get, the bigger the print, yes.
Yeah, let's see. Excuse me, I'm reading this.
By the way, if you have a computer, you can log on to our chat room at kcnr1460.com. If you haven't joined in our chat room yet, it is... at times quite lively. If you bring up our master page there, kcnr1460.com, click on the On Air button. You'll not only be able to listen to our stream, but also enjoy the chat room. No registration. Just you give yourself a nickname, and you can chat away to your heart's content.
All right. Well, we just got a great question. And the question is, when we put together these ideation sessions or these vision planning sessions with a group of the community, does it really make sense to do that, to get the community to come in and to voice their opinion? In management, there's a syndrome called the bumper sticker syndrome. And the bumper sticker syndrome suggests that the people with the most bumper stickers in the back of their car oftentimes have the worst opinions, right? So that's where the challenge is that, yeah, are the members of the community, are in that group of an ideation center, are they really qualified to make recommendations about what the economic development plan should be? And I believe the answer to that question is no, of course not. The community requires that the people in charge of economic development have expertise and specific training in strategic planning around economic development, that they understand these complex variables, and most importantly, that they understand the role of the digital community. I think a lot of people woefully underestimate what it means to create digital buzzes and how that actually drives it. So, yeah, the answer is no. The community should not be the only voice, or this small group of the community should not be the only voice, because it's not representative of the entire community. So definitely that's a very, very good question. The only caveat to that, I would say, is let's hope that we've got leadership, and I think we might. Let's hope we have leadership that has the expertise to pull the right levers to make sure we move in the right direction.
Well, I've maintained, Nick, that you do have to walk that line between becoming a mob-rule town, basically,
yeah,
where politicians want to take no responsibility, and a oligarchy where the business and the politicians make all the decisions and cut the small person out. You got to walk that line and make that middle ground, or you have severe problems either way.
Absolutely. And, you know, in business innovation, we have the same challenge. Who do we listen to? How do we listen to our customers? How do we listen to our internal group? And so you really have to balance that. But there needs to be a champion. I'm not sure who that champion is for Shasta County. I think there has to be a champion that is all-inclusive, that can really manage corralling this group of opposite opinions so that we can come up with a unified vision that'll benefit us all. All right. Well, listen, that's the end of my controversial topics for my show today. We're going to have Jim Milestone. Well, maybe not. Jim Milestone.
Want a bet?
Right. Whiskeytown is very controversial. So we're going to have Jim Milestone come in for a half hour, and then we're going to do some fun stuff at the last half hour to get you ready for 2011.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio on this last year of 2010. Stick around for another hour of our guest host, Nick Webb, right here on KCNR Shasta Redding.
Okay, welcome back. This is Nick Webb. I'm standing in today for Carl and Linda Bott. We have with us today Jim Milestone, who is the park superintendent for Whiskeytown National Park. Do we call it a national park or national recreation unit?
National recreation area.
Area, gotcha. So, you know, one of the reasons I think I moved to Redding was Whiskeytown. My family and I, we spent a lot of time there. And one thing that was interesting to discover was, you know, you drive by the lake and you see, you know, some 3,000 acres of lake, but actually there's 40,000 plus acres of awesome trails and waterfalls. And why don't you give us a tour of Whiskeytown?
Sure, Nick. It's a 42,000 acre park, and its lowest point is on Lower Clear Creek at 700 feet and goes all the way up to the summit of Shasta-Bali at 6,200 feet. And it stretches across the western Shasta County from Old Shasta all the way up towards just past Crystal Creek drainage, and it extends up onto Trinity County. Actually, there's about 13 acres, a little secret, 13 acres of Trinity County is within the legislative boundary of Whiskeytown National Recreation Area. And City Father James Carr, back in the 1960s, you know, was the mover and shaker here in Redding that was able to expand this idea of Whiskeytown Lake, going from a concept of just a small 5,000 acre county park into a large national recreation area, unit of the National Park Service, by being able to expand it to the 42,000 acres. He loved Shasta-Bali Mountain. That was his favorite place. He and his brother Lawrence Carr just absolutely loved it. And in 1937, James Carr picked up Lawrence Carr at the train depot coming back from law school in Washington, D.C. at Georgetown University. And his brother James said, "Where do you want me to take you?" And he said, "Take me to Whiskeytown." And they just loved it up there. So they drove up there, and his brother Lawrence looked at Shasta-Bali Mountain and said, "If this mountain were in the eastern United States, they'd make it a national park." And James Carr remembered that, and 20 years later, he was in the position to be able to do that as the Undersecretary of the Interior.
You know, it seems to me, over the last... Now, you and I, this is by way of history, years ago, there were four guys in a logo that tried to... we actually did create Friends of Whiskeytown to try to help raise money to do some of the... I'm not involved with it anymore, but a great organization has done a lot of good for the national park. And I know that you guys are doing a lot in the way of trails. And I've had the opportunity to go up to Whiskeytown Falls a lot last year, and it's amazing how few people in Shasta have even been up to Whiskeytown Falls.
Well, we have about 6,000 people a year now that hike up to the falls. There's people up there every day. Hottest time of the day, or even when there's snow, people are hiking up there to the falls to see it. And it's become a kind of a family tradition for a lot of families to hike up there on Mother's Day or people's birthdays. Mm. If you look at the trail register that we have at the base of the falls, there's people can write their names and where they're from. And you look through that register, and we collect all those papers. There's people from all over the world. And it's interesting. We find more international visitors there at Whiskeytown Falls than we do, like, on our beaches. People are singling out these waterfall hikes. So it's a great place.
Now, tell me what's going on over the last couple of years. I know you guys have done a lot in the way of expanding the trail system.
We have. One of the things that I saw when I got there was, I'll give you an example, the Brandy Creek Falls Trail used to just go up almost to the falls, but about a quarter mile from the falls, the trail just stopped. And I was up there with my wife and baby and backpack, and we were trying to get up... go up to see Brandy Creek Falls, and we couldn't get up there. And all of a sudden, a guy came out of the bushes, kind of climbed down, and I said, "Hey, did you see where the falls is?" He said, "Oh, yeah, just about a quarter mile up. You just have to climb up the rocks, get there." And I thought, you know, why doesn't the trail go all the way to the base of the falls? So we've expanded our trail system, and we now have a really nice trail up to Brandy Creek Falls this summer. We just had the Young Smart Business Center youths build a footbridge up there at Whiskeytown Falls so people can gain access year-round to the falls. The high water prevented people from getting up to see the falls in the wintertime, and now you can. So we've built trails up through Papoose Pass over the shoulder of Mount Shasta-Bali that bring people, visitors, into the heart of the park, into the deep, old forest that's up there.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I'm real impressed about, and I'm, you know, I have, you and I have Had a lot of fun political debates over the years. I love the fact that there is a lot of volunteers involved in these efforts, and that that the park is so supported by volunteers that it really is impressive to see how well that works there.
Nick, we have over 465 volunteers in the park running our visitor center. We have the kayak volunteers. We got people from the different service clubs around town. The Reading Mountain Bike Club does a lot, and we get a lot of youth support from, like, the Student Conservation Association that brings in college students from back east and throughout the Midwest to come out and see California and work on our trails. So, 465 volunteers. We've got a great program. Lots of happy volunteers getting a lot of satisfaction out of their job up at Whiskey Town.
Yeah. You have a tough job. I know that everything you do makes everybody mad, and I know that... You know, what I love, the fact is that you're a federal agency and you've done a beautiful job, in my humble opinion, in managing that like a business. And you've brought in volunteers. You have tremendous efficiencies. And I personally feel like you've just done an amazing job there. All right. Well, we're going to take a break and come back and talk a little more to Jim Milestone just after this.
KCNR 1460, where it is 8:10, the forecast for the northern Sacramento Valley. It will be chance of rain after 4 o'clock this afternoon. Tonight's low will be around 31 degrees. 50% chance of rain for your New Year's Day and a high near 44. Right now, 33 degrees downtown Reading. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. And now, back to our guest host, Nick Webb, on Free Fire Radio.
All righty, welcome back. And right now, I have in the studio with me Jim Milestone, the superintendent and Imperial Grand Poobah of Whiskey Town National Lake. He makes me call him Mr. Milestone. So, Mr. Milestone, what is... you just got back from the Gulf cleaning up oil. And actually, the Park Service, interesting, that you deploy, and a lot of the other federal agencies deploy, almost like the military, to different kinds of events to sort of help out, and you just got deployed to the Gulf.
That's right, Nick. I just spent 2 weeks in Florida on the beach. Sounds pretty good, except for it was freezing cold. I was bundled up. Actually, it was one of the more colder experiences I've ever had in my life, and picking up chunks of oil at Gulf Islands National Seashore. And the National Park Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, BLM, U.S. Forest Service, sends their workers with special skills out across the nation to disasters that occur. Our firefighters out of Whiskey Town travel all over the nation, from Hawaii to up in Washington, Montana. You know, we go all over the West.
I saw the pictures. It's I didn't realize it was still that bad.
It is. I was at a place called Perdido Key in Gulf Islands National Seashore, and it's a beautiful sugar white sandy beaches, and there's oil just littering across the beaches. It looks like thousands and thousands of chocolate chip cookies and cow patties.
Hmm.
And then if you dig down deeper into the sand, you'll find, periodically, you'll find thick layers of oil about 2 inches thick. And you know, we were recovering, one of our teams was recovering 1,400 pounds of oil off the beach a day.
Wow.
And these are all local workers that are picking up the oil. My job was to make sure that they don't mess up the resource and stay out of the dunes. And but everywhere within the high tide limit, it's just in the sand, there's little pea-sized pieces of oil all the way up to, you know, pieces that would cover your living room floor.
Wow. You have in front of you the annual report, and I want to get to this before you have to leave. You know, it's interesting, there's a lot that goes on up at Whiskey Town that you really don't hear about much in Reading. And I wonder if maybe you could just touch on some of the highlights from your 2010 annual report.
Sure. Well, the first thing that we, first bullet of note was that we destroyed $33 million worth of illegal marijuana that was being grown by the Mexican cartels within the legislative boundary of Whiskey Town. And we worked very closely with the Shasta County Sheriff's Department in these raids. They bring in resources, and we bring in our rangers, and continuing to do pretty extensive investigations on these characters that are raising this illegal crop in the park, and they're doing it way up in the deep in the brush and the poison oak and the manzanita way up in these drainages. It's a very secretive operation, and our rangers are out patrolling and watching for them. And we raided, I believe, six different sites this summer. We arrested six people. A couple of them were armed with pistols. Wow. In the past, we've made arrests with people that had M16s and AK-47s.
Wow.
Lots of stuff.
Jim, can you quickly address the environmental damage that these grows do? I'll use the word crap that they leave behind.
Yeah, it's a mess. You'll have anywhere from 2 to 15 men living in some of these areas. There's no restrooms up there. There's toilet paper, human feces. There's garbage all over the place. And they use herbicides from Mexico, pesticides. They're poaching our wildlife, killing the black bears. We find the carcasses and shooting the deer that come in and try to eat the crop. So it's a huge effort, and it costs thousands of dollars to clean up these sites afterwards. And that's one of the things we're really concerned about, is maintaining the water quality in both our creeks and in the lake itself.
One of the questions was anybody prosecuted?
We have several people in jail that are locked up that we arrested. When you have some of these sites, there's over 1,000 plants, there's weapons involved, and you're an illegal immigrant, you will be kept in jail. Otherwise, most of the people are typically just deported off, if they're on a smaller grow and there's no weapons involved.
I see. Give us a few more highlights before we...
Sure. Well, we were able to hire quite a few people this summer, which is great since it was the recession, and we were able to hire... we had 149 employees this summer at Whiskeytown, and that included the youth workers, the YCC. We had the Student Conservation Association. We had the young men from the Smart Business Center here in Reading. We were able to do a whole bunch of... get a lot of work done. We received some of the American Reinvestment Act money, and we're able to do a lot of work on our mine closures to make safer conditions up there on some of these old mines. And we're able to re-landscape the Crystal Creek Quarry, where the tailing pile from the Trinity River Tunnel emerged out into the park. If you drive up towards Whiskeytown Falls, you'll go by the quarry. It looks a lot nicer now. We spent quite a bit of money up there working on that. And these were all contracted jobs. We were able to get companies to come in and bring in their heavy equipment operators and different contractors to do a lot of this work. So we were able to bring a lot of money back into the community.
Okay.
We have a caller on the line. And, Ron, you had a question about bully shoop, and I'm never sure how to spell that.
Okay. I think that's where all the antennas are at up there.
Oh, Shastabali.
Or Shastabali. Okay, wrong. I'm sorry. Are they still planning on making that a wilderness area and closing that all down?
No, we never proposed that. We did have our environmental assessment, and we went through the public process. We chose an alternative that allows for the antennas to continue up there, and if you've noticed, in the summertime particularly, we've been able to paint all the antennas up there and clean up a lot of the garbage that was left up there. The place looks, I think, a lot better than it did. And now the National Park Service is managing the site. And we have 19 telecommunication companies up there. Mm-hmm. And they are all, we're working together with them. And you'll be seeing that operation there for a long time to come.
Okay. Will we still be able to go up there?
Yeah. It's open... it's open through the summer months. Once the road dries out, the gates open, and people can go up to the top throughout the entire summer. Once the snow melts, we're able to get our heavy equipment up there to clear the road.
But no off-road vehicles, but you can take a licensed vehicle up there.
Yeah, you can take a licensed vehicle, any vehicle with a plate on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great view up there.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. All right, well, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back and closing up with Jim Milestone, the superintendent of Whiskeytown National Park.
26. This portion of the program brought to you by Tobacco and Brew on Hilltop Drive, home of Espresso Joe's. Go check them out. Now back to our guest host, Nick Webb.
Yeehaw. Welcome back. And once again, thanks to Carl and Linda for having me run the show today. I can't believe they actually did that. Are they crazy? Okay, so we've got Jim Milestone here with us from Whiskeytown National Park. And, you know, I know that, I don't have a very thick hide. That's why I just lay low. And I know that every decision you make, from smoking on the beach to the antennas on Bali, I know that they're all controversial. There's no way. I know you have a lot of – I happen to ride dual-sport off-road motorcycles, so, I get the off-road vehicle people. I get all the dialogue that goes on. But I know that at the end of the day, because I know you personally, I've known you for over a decade, your goal is to try to balance all of that out and provide the best possible experience. In fact, I know that one of the reasons, as a entrepreneur capitalist pig, I must admit that I'm impressed by your ability as a federal leader to really take your resources and use it to serve. I know this sounds like a political paid commercial, but you really have. I know that that you've done all you can to provide that. What are the kind of things that you're doing to make that happen?
Well, we have a great staff up at Whiskeytown. The employees up there, they absolutely love the park. They love working up there, and they're really committed to the mission of the National Park Service. And our agency was created in 1916, and it was given its mission, which states that the purpose of the national parks is to conserve the scenery and the wildlife and the natural and historic objects therein, and to leave it unimpaired for the enjoyment of future generations. And there's 391 national park sites in the nation, and in California we have part of that. We have three national recreation areas: Santa Monica, Golden Gate National Recreation Area, and Whiskeytown National Recreation Area. And we're trying to make it into the premier park experience. We really want people to come up there and have a good time. So that is everything from our 24/7 restroom up at our visitor center that everyone on 299 uses, as it's strategically located, to having a quality experience on the beach. And we want, we believe that the waterfalls that we have up there are just gorgeous, and we really want people to enjoy that park and get everything that they possibly can out of that experience. And that's why we have mountain biking on the trails. We have equestrians riding the trails every day of the year. We have these athletic events with the open water swims and the foot races, and just the great opportunities to sail and wakeboard across the lake. It's just a beautiful spot. We want people to have a good time there and have happy memories of the park.
Yeah, well, I know our family certainly has. I think we've utilized every single aspect. In fact, we buy the pass, the annual pass, which is dirt cheap. Is it $25?
$25,
and
yeah.
It's good for Lassen National Park.
It is good for Lassen Volcanic National Park,
yeah,
as well. So
which
it's
is probably
deal.
One of the most underutilized parks in the country, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, I don't want to say I like Lassen Park better with Jim here. We'll talk later. But no, they're both great places, and we spend a lot of time up at Lassen as well. But you run the park like a business, and you run it with the idea of the guest experience in mind. And I think that's kind of a magical thing.
Well, we have we really have a great staff that takes care of our budget and maintenance program, our resources management program, and our visitor services and law enforcement. So we're really trying to, do the best job we possibly can up there.
Well, Jim, I know you're a busy guy, and I really do appreciate you taking the time to help me out with the show here today. And it's been a real honor having you on.
Nick, thanks. And just remember, it's a federal holiday, and I got out of bed.
Come here, okay? Gee, and you have your uniform on. It's insane. Thanks, Jim.
And you're listening to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. Our guest host, Nick Webb, will be right back after these messages. On the very last day of 2010, weather for the Redding area. 30% chance of rain after 4 o'clock today. It'll be down to about 31 degrees tonight. Not much chance of snow, though. Not enough moisture in this particular storm. 50% chance of rain for your New Year's Day. Right now, 35 in downtown Reading. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. And now, back to our guest host, Nick Webb, on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hello, and welcome back. Well, I decided to start the program out this morning at 7 a.m. by choosing probably the most controversial topic I could possibly find, which, of course, is economic development in Shasta County. And I think, again, the good news is there's a bunch of great people in this community that all want the same thing, and that's to maintain and protect our quality of life while providing
new and improved opportunities for our kids. So I think we're on the right track there. And then we had a chance to talk to Jim Milestone from Whiskeytown National Park. Great guy, great agency, doing some really good stuff. Now, what I'd like to talk to you about is this is New Year's Eve. And, you know, I developed somehow in my life, or early on, I think starting in my 12, I developed what's called a P plan, my power plan for the year. And I've gotten to be really, really good at setting and keeping goals. And I'd like to share with you some of the secrets that I have used over the years to really achieve some cool stuff. Now, the challenge with this is that it is fraught with failure, and we'll talk about that in a little more detail. So before I start on my tips for how to achieve your goals for 2011, if somebody will call in and tell me what your goals are for the year, I will give you a copy of my Cost of Being Sick book, Surviving the Healthcare Meltdown, which really kind of provides a step-by-step guide on how to get healthy, how to stay healthy, how to get fit. And it was a fun book to write. I wrote the first edition of that book back in 2002. And when I wrote the first edition, a lot of the predictions were considered a little bit goofy. I mean, nobody thought that we could ever get to the point where we developed health value scores and that there would be an economic meltdown centered around healthcare. But, of course, you know, here we are in 2010, and many of those things did. In fact, all of my predictions did come true, and so we did the second edition of the book. And so if somebody calls and tells me what their goals are, I'll get you a copy of that book. All right, so let's talk about how do you set goals. The first thing that you have to remember, and this is the part that you kind of have to get to, you have to start with the fact that you have to realize that something's got to change. And then you have to recognize the fact that it literally must change and that you have to change it. I think a lot of people that have tried to set goals in their life, they're sort of arbitrary about it. And as a result of that, they never get it done. And Bob, I don't know if you've ever had the occasion to go from the planning stage to seeing the victory the year before, or the year as a post-mortem to your goals. But, you know, that's an exciting thing. I mean, have you experienced that?
Well, I'm one of those ADD guys who, thank God for my wife who keeps me on a track, and she will map things out to the 90th degree, and that's more her bailiwick. I'm more of a reactionary, to be fair, but she does a pretty good job keeping me organized.
Yeah, that helps. I mean, that's one of the things you really need to make this all happen. And I think also the key is you got to have big enough, meaningful goals that really, you know, resonate with you. You know, I was looking at some research, which I do every year during my goal stating process, and it was interesting to see that out of the people that sign up to go to a gym, for an example, 80%, 90% of Americans would never dream of going to a gym. And out of the people that do go, the overwhelming majority of those people are not going to the gym by March. They're just gone. So you have to sort of, and then out of the ones that do go, they get to the gym and they drink coffee and watch TV.
You know? Well, yeah.
And I see that a lot. And then ultimately, even the ones that do sort of stand up, they tend to fall behind pretty quickly and pretty much just give up. So they found that 80% never sign up. Out of the 80% that sign, or the 20% that do sign up, 80% of them never show up. And out of the 20% that do show up, 80% of them don't do anything when they get there. And then ultimately, within 3 months, the ones that are there ultimately give up. And the reason I mention that, I think it's a good representative example of what goals look like anyway. I mean, what the topography of goals are. They're fraught with failure. So most people, not surprisingly, don't do anything. And I always do, and I did this morning at 3 a.m. Before I had to come in this morning, and I said and did I did a retrospective of what worked and what didn't. I think that's another thing that's really important. And it's a lot of fun once you get to the point where you've done some goals and you've actually achieved them. This year, I've written 3 books. Two of those books are from the largest publisher on the planet, and that's a very hard thing to do. And frankly, when I set that goal out, I had no idea how I was going to accomplish it. I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. So again, if somebody wants to call in and share with us or share with us in the chat room,
605-4567, the number to call. And we do have a couple of people in the chat room commenting, and but we'd love to hear from you. That's one of the reasons for talk radio.
Yeah, and you get a free book. So the first person that calls and gives me your goals, we will give you a copy of The Cost of Being Sick, which is an interesting read. You can do it in about two nights, and I think it's a powerful book. All right, were there some questions on the chat room?
Just the usual sort of things. And okay, well, let me take care of that and carry on. While
okay,
I take the
all
call.
Right. All right. So we're going to talk about what that process is of setting up plans and how to use index cards and how to achieve these things. And it's worth this process. It's amazing to me how many people live their lives sort of accidentally. And so these tools that we're going to share with you in a few minutes, I think you'll find real valuable. So let's get this. We're going to get this caller on.
All right, John, we got you.
Good morning.
Hey, John, how are you?
Hi, Nick. Listen, as far as the goals go, this last year I expanded my walk, my daily walk from 3 miles to 4.5 miles. I'm doing 550 push-ups a day instead
Whoa.
Of sets of 55.
Wow, 550 push-ups?
Yes, 550 a day, and I'm walking a half-a-mile balance curb. That is really helping my overall balance and making things very clear for me. This year, I intend to change my walking pattern to a jog and make it a 5 mile jog 5 days a week. I'm going to stay with the push-ups at 550 because I find any more than that is very painful for my shoulders.
Yeah.
I start feeling kind of overburdened. And might even reduce that down a little bit. But my goal is to get my waist size, my pant waist size down from 35 to 33.
Wow.
And that's what I'm going to be working on.
It's John, it's, by the way, you got the free book and you can pick it up here at the radio station.
Well,
I think
you'll
enjoy it. You bet. I was at Blog World in Las Vegas, and the U.S. Army had a booth there for Army Strong Stories. And in there was a drill sergeant. And they were handing out T-shirts, but in order to get the T-shirts, you had to do 20 push-ups. So there was this line of people, maybe, 15 or 20 deep. And I would say the medial age was around 30 years of age. And I sit there and watch that go by, and it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Person after person after person couldn't get to 3 push-ups. In fact, one shirt out of the 15 people in line was doled out.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It really is. Now, I have to admit, I don't think I could do yours. I can do 25. I got my shirt out of the deal. And mainly it's because of my shoulder. After a while, my right shoulder that I tweaked, kind of goes out. But that's interesting. That's a tremendous. Do you look and do sort of a post-mortem? I mean, what I tend to do is look at, what I've accomplished to try to give me that additional juice to achieve my goals into the next year.
Well, what I did was I evaluated increased level was, and it started out. I started out, believe this or not, at the beginning of the year doing 70 push-ups, and
wow.
Worked it up to 550.
Wow!
And like I said, don't be confused. It's in sets of 55. It's not all 550 in a row.
Yeah.
But the increasing levels I found was kind of interesting because I started out, I'd just add a couple at a time to see how it would work out, and I'd say, I can't possibly do any more than this. But then I would.
Yeah.
And it each week it got easier and easier and easier, and the increases got easier. But when I got to the point of doing the sets of 55, I wanted to increase it to my age, and I'm not going to tell you what that is, but I can't go that far.
Well, that's a very impressive, and it just goes to show you that if you can get through the pain, then which is usually they say that if you can sustain something for 20 days, about the time it takes for a chicken to hatch an egg,
exactly,
you can achieve those goals. But we got to go for a break.
It seems to be that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I do the same thing. I climb up a hill every morning with two other guys, and it never gets easier
No, well, but it does. It really does. You just don't feel like it at that moment.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, when you start seeing results, you get that feedback, and that's what keeps you moving on.
The aerobic of that hill climb is fabulous.
Yeah, really. We go up Middletown, and it's almost like we climb 900 feet in about 25 minutes or so. So
that'll get your heart going.
Yeah, yeah. Well, John, thanks so much for calling in. I really
You're
appreciate
welcome,
it.
You're welcome, Nick. Have a great day. Thanks for being there today. You were fun.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun doing it.
Bye.
Okay, so we're going to take a break and come back to close this baby up.
You're listening to KCNR 1460. We'll be right back. It is 8:40, home of Free Fire Media, and make that about 20, more like about 17 minutes before 9 o'clock. It's been one of those mornings. And, Nick, it's just been fabulous having you on as a guest host. But I have a question that, you know, my perspective is very much Shasta County. But looking at the big picture and locally, do you think, I mean, the politicians love to tell us, you know, prosperity is right around the corner. And that's what Hoover said just before the crash of 29. Are we, is there a light at the end of the tunnel, or is it an oncoming train, to use the old phrase?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and what's fun is I've had the unique honor of being able to interview over 500 of the Fortune 1000 companies. I've interviewed a lot of startup companies in the digital space, and one of the things, I guess, that here's my concern. My biggest concern from a macro point of view in terms of the U.S. economy is that in less than 3 years, China will be filing more U.S. patents than U.S. companies. If you think about it, this is very much what was happening in the late, in the 70s, 80s, and into the early 90s. We turned over our manufacturing to China. And it was one of those situations where it was so gradual that before we realized it, we were no longer the manufacturing leaders of the country. We invented manufacturing. We created automated, we created the TQM systems. We created vertical manufacturing. We created automation. We created manufacturing, plain and simple, and we have lost manufacturing. My biggest concern, if you look at education and the emphasis on science and technologies, it's just not there. We need to educate more kids in the area of digital media, in areas of biosciences, devices, mechanical engineering, and so on. If we don't do that, we're going to have some real problems.
Well, I would submit to you that what broke us out of the economic doldrums of the 1970s, remember the days of wage price freezes and all that, was the Silicon Valley Revolution. We need something of that magnitude to bust us out of this one, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think that the book that I'm writing right now is called The Digital Media Innovation Playbook for Wiley. And in fact, yesterday I had a wonderful conversation with the vice president of their social and digital media program at Kodak. And you talk to Kodak, you talk to AT&T, you talk to a lot of the other leaders that we talk to in our research, you realize that there is a lot of hope out there, but a lot of the emerging business opportunities is going to be in the digital media space. We don't know for sure what that looks like because it's a fast-moving market, but we do know that digital media is really the new communication tool.
Well, news story that just in the last couple of days that Facebook has surpassed Google as the top visited website on the web.
Right, yeah. If you and we have all these statistics in the book that'll be out in 2011. If you look at where this is heading, even when you talk to the true thought leaders in the area of digital media, they are suffering from technological whiplash. They are trying to figure out where it's heading. Unfortunately, for a lot of companies there, and especially small companies, they don't realize that if you're in Reading and you're selling vitamins, you're a digital company. You're competing with an online retailer and UPS. If you don't become digital and you don't understand these very important things just locally, you are not going to compete very well. But I think that, you know, the economy, I think there's a lot of hope now that there's some certainty in terms of what the tax rates look like. You can see that there's been some good activity in the stock market in terms of how people are responding and individual investors are responding to that. I wish we would have asked Peter Sanders a lot of these questions because he really has a great insight. But the bottom line is I think we're on the right track. We're not going to see an escalation in economic growth in 2011, but I think we're going to see all trends moving in the right direction. Unfortunately, I think a little bit too slowly. And there could be some risk of some additional dips in real estate, both commercial and residential. And we also see a couple other areas where there may be some dips. But generally speaking, you know, we look at a lot of economic indicators almost every day because of all the different technologies that we're involved in. And I think most of the needles on the dashboard are looking pretty good at this point of the game for 2011.
Well, one trend, and before we take the break, I wanted to throw this out. I do see Americans moving towards not just a simpler lifestyle, but a more compact lifestyle. People are looking around, especially us boomers whose kids have moved out, do I really need a 3,000 square foot house? And a lot of people are saying, not only no, but hell no. It's too much trouble to take care of. My wife and I downsized a few years ago, and more people. And, of course, the construction industry is not too happy about this. And, in fact, many counties say, no, you can't have a house that's less than X number of square feet. And I think that mindset's going to have to change, because not only is it more efficient, you're going to be consuming less, and I think that a more compact lifestyle, you can still have a good quality of life and not occupy as much space or eat up as much energy.
Yeah, I mean, in general, right now, it is extremely considered by most people distasteful to be, a spendthrift like we used to think was the rule of the day in the 90s. I was a keynote speaker recently at DDI, which is a big retail forum. And when you talk to national retailers like Barnes & Noble and Macy's and so on, you see that definitely people are looking for value. Price driving is a big deal. In fact, now people are – I was in Best Buy the other day. My daughter and I looked at a camera, and we scanned the QR code with our smartphone. It instantly took us up to the website. We pulled off the SKU number. We then ran that up on Google, and we're able to find the product significantly cheaper with free shipping elsewhere. So this is the reality of the digital world. People have a lot of control over spending and a lot of options. So I think one of the biggest drivers is definitely going to be the area of price sensitivity.
We'll be back with some final thoughts from Nick Webb, our guest host here on Free Fire Radio, right after this. You're listening to KCNR 1460. 9 o'clock on Free Fire Radio, and our guest host has been Nick Webb. This portion of the show brought to you by B&T Satellite. You'll find them on the web, readyhdtv.com. They are your dish network provider, and they're a local company. And Nick, before we head out of here, I'm a small business owner. I create content. And so question one would be, of course, what I make is a non-tangible product. Do you see that taking greater precedence as opposed to things that you can put in a bag and carry off?
Absolutely. When we talk about economic development, we have to realize that the biggest growth are micro businesses, and a lot of those micro businesses are content creators. So that's definitely a great business, and it does play into the overall economic landscape. I mean, there's just no question about that. So I think, you know, the message I would like to leave everybody with in terms of how to have a better year related to your business is, after researching the second book, The Digital Media Innovation Playbook, it has become acutely clear to me that we are all in the digital business. And to the extent that we're good at understanding the digital business, we can grow and prosper. If we ignore it or do what I call in the book the catch-22, where we hire a 22-year-old to put up a fan page on Facebook, if that's your idea of a digital strategy, things could go awry, trust me.
So learning, not only having these tools, but learning how to use them effectively. And you don't need to spend, I would think, you know, a gazillion dollars on a consultant who's going to do stuff that you could teach yourself, correct?
I think that's right. I mean, even talking to Kodak yesterday, that is really, I think they are the icon example of a large corporation, $7 billion in sales, that they have been able to master the digital universe in a very old and bureaucratic company. And they did it with just a small handful of people. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the commitment, your digital commitment, consists of a half hour to an hour a day. I think that you're going to see a transmutation from print and different types of advertising media into more digital spending. So at the end of the day, you just have to know this. I remember 10 years ago when I was asked to be the keynote speaker at EDC here when I first moved to town, I made a prediction that several companies would go out of business because of their lack of understanding of the role of the Internet. And sure enough, and unfortunately, many of those companies failed. They failed because they didn't understand that they're not competing with other companies in Shasta County. They're competing with the digital world. I can have anything delivered to my doorstep tomorrow, and chances are for less money. So we need to create total customer experiences, and we need to know how to master the digital universe.
A final question I'm going to put to you, having known you this last couple of months. Out of all the places you could have lived, and you, Nick, could live literally anywhere, why are you in this town? Why are you in Reading?
You know, that's a very good question. I moved up here, and I think it was a handful of people that I met that made me, you know, I appreciate authenticity. I love people who are real.
Coming from L.A. 11 years ago, being around the lack of authenticity is something that is troubling to me. So that's what I appreciate. I appreciate real people, and that's why I love this community and have tried to do what I can on a volunteer basis to help out any way I can.
And the recreational opportunities ain't too shabby either, right?
No, they really are good. And you know, look, I have four kids, and their safety and their quality of life to me is my number one priority, and I think we nailed it for them.
All right. Well, any final New Year's? What's your New Year's resolution, real quick?
I got to see hours. But, you know, for one thing, I've got some fitness goals. I do have another book that I did at the last minute finishing up here. And obviously, a lot of them go towards the success of these two books. But anyway, I would like to thank Carl and Linda Bott for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to KCNR Shasta Redding. Happy New Year.